We first want to make sure that everybody has a copy of the sheet. It's entitled Questions and Answers About Sin. Okay. Now, as you look at this handout, this is like some others that we've used in the past. We have several answers, and they're taken from a number of Bible passages, so we'll try to get two or three people lined up at a time to help us get through the material. There's probably about 35 passages on here. All right, let's pick up the first two. Each of these comes from the Old Testament. The first one comes from the book of Jeremiah, Jeremiah 17, verse 1. And then after Jeremiah 17, we'd like to have a helper for Genesis 3, verse 6. Jeremiah 17, verse 1 will be taken by Harvey. And then Genesis 3, 6, who would like to take this one? All right, I saw Lois and Maxine. We'll head you towards the book of Proverbs, chapter 9, verses 17 and 18. Jeremiah 17:1 is a passage that I don't know that we've heard here too often, but it is a passage that illustrates sin. So let's go ahead and see what it says. Harvey.
The sin of Judah is written with the pen of iron, with point of diamond. It is graven upon the table of their hearts and upon the horns of their altars.
Okay. What's the illustration here about sin? He says it's written. And then how does he illustrate the writing? He says it's like... All right, it's not going to disappear. He uses words such as iron, uses the illustration of a diamond. So it's like the sin, in this particular case, is etched. We sometimes find something that is etched in stone, or we find something that a person has. Remember the old days where people used to etch their social security number on various things? That was common for a while. They go out and get one of the engravers and things that were important to them. And, well, finally they realized that probably wasn't the best thing to do with identity theft. But they would say, we're going to etch this on this item. So if it's ever lost, if anybody ever steals it, they're going to know who it belongs to. Well, that's kind of the picture of sin. God says it's serious, and it's not something that we can easily deal with and really can't deal with until we come to God and look at things on his terms. Then Genesis 3, verse 6. If this sin is etched in the minds and the lives, the hearts of people, you know, sometimes something is etched and it's pretty. And sometimes something is etched or it is put in a permanent place and it's not so attractive. So let's go back to Genesis 3, verse 6 and answer our question. Is sin attractive or is it unattractive?
When the woman saw that the tree was good for food and that it was a delight to the eyes and that the tree was desirable to make one wise, she took from its fruit and ate. And she gave also to her husband with her.
Okay, thank you. Do we have some more sheets by chance? Okay. All right, so based on Genesis 3, verse 6, thank you. Would we say sin is attractive or it's unattractive?
Yes.
Otherwise, people would not become involved with it. But sometimes we can get involved with something and we think, well, that's not the right thing to do. It's not a good choice, and it doesn't really matter that very much. It doesn't matter that much. But here, thinking back to Jeremiah 17, verse 1, attractive, you get into it, it's not so favorable, you find that it has some bad consequences. Jeremiah 17, verse 1, what have you done? It's there permanently, so you have to find a really good fix, the right fix, to deal with it. So sin is a very, very difficult thing. Now, one might say, well, why would people be involved with sin if it's indelibly marked on an individual's life? A person might say, well, you know, it is attractive, it is maybe enjoyable. And this is what we find in our next reference. Maxine, I think that's you, Proverbs 9, verses 17 through 18.
Stolen water is sweet, and bread eaten in secret is pleasant, but he does not know that the dead... Am I reading wrong?
You are.
Oh. But he does not know that the dead are there, that her guests are in the depths of hell.
Okay, let's go back to the first part of that. Since it's another passage that we don't read too often. Let's go back and look at verse 17 again, if you would.
Stolen water is sweet, and bread eaten in secret is pleasant.
Yeah, what's he saying about sin?
Sweet.
Very enjoyable.
Yeah, and what's enjoyable? Sin. I never stole watermelons as a kid. We grew up with some watermelon patches, but there were some kids that I knew, they'd go out and steal watermelons. Or they'd go out and they'd steal apples. There's a story told about this fella. He grew apples. And one day, a friend was coming up, and apple trees lined the driveway, and the friend thought that he'd stop and get some apples and, you know, eat a couple before he got to his friend's house, at least eat one of them. and got the apple off the tree. It was the right time of year, and he said, man, that's bad. He said, I don't know how you stay in business. Those are the worst apples I've ever had. And the guy said, let me tell you what I'm doing. He said, I line my road with the worst apples I can find. And then the good ones are inside. I used to have a problem with theft. So, you know, people sometimes find that attractive to steal and to take and whatnot. You know, why do people shoplift? You find sometimes some rich people, some celebrities, they shoplift. You know, for a couple bucks here or $10 here, they got plenty of money. They probably buy the store. Why the shoplift? It's the excitement. It's the thrill. Let's go out and steal something and hopefully we don't get caught. So those stolen waters, he says, they're sweet. They're pleasurable. And there are several other illustrations of this, that sin is a very, very pleasurable thing. Otherwise, people would not be attracted to it, and they certainly would not be involved with it. Then let's look at Hebrews 11:25 and relate this to the answer that we just gave, and then we'll also get for point five, question five, Isaiah 3, verse 9, and 2 Kings 5, 25 to 27. Who would like to pick up Hebrews 11, verse 25 for us? Hebrews, all right, Harvey, back to you. Josh, let's ask you to go back to the Old Testament and read Isaiah 3, 9. And then let's also pick up somebody for 2 Kings 5, 25 to 27, Steve. All right, Hebrews 11, verse 25.
Would you rather suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season?
Okay, there it is. Is there pleasure in sin? Yes, there is. But God gives us a warning. He says, how long does it last? For a season. It's going to be temporary. But there are a lot of people who find it to be so enjoyable, so pleasurable, it is their choice. But it's a bad choice. Then we ask this question. Two passages. Is sin something people seek to hide or display? Well, let's go to the Bible for the answer. I think we could probably guess. But let's start with Isaiah 3, verse 9.
For the look on their faces bears witness against them. They proclaim their sin like Sodom. They do not hide it. Woe to them, for they have brought evil on themselves.
Okay. Little insight there about Sodom, but what's the other point? What do they do in this case as far as sin? Trying to hide it? Are they trying to be public about it?
Proclaim it.
It's an open display. Look at what we do. Are there not times today where we see people openly display sin? You look at some of the parades that they have in some parts of the United States, you see some bad stuff. And as we think about what people may say or talk about in the work situation, we have an open display of sin. What else? Where else do we see open displays of sin?
Well, there's, for instance, homosexuality. Everybody's trying to make everybody believe that this is acceptable. Well, we know that it's not, but look how blatant it is now. And they don't even look at it. A lot of the people don't even look at it as sin.
No.
These people can't help it. You know?
Yeah.
So it's...
Yeah, there's just all those various things that people choose to display. That would be one. You think about alcohol. Sometimes let me go out and show you how much I can drink. Or you think about drug use. It's open in some places. So the world is often very, very open when it comes to sin. Puts it on public display. But then let's look at 2 Kings chapter 5, verses 25 through 27 for the opposite point. I'm sorry.
One comment in Romans, the first chapter.
Yes.
Not only do the same, but they also give party approval.
Yes.
Of those that do it.
Yeah.
And that's the real sad thing. So.
It is. And you think about Acts 7 kind of comes to mind, let's kill the guy.
Okay.
And then you've got Saul, for example, standing there and holding the garments and the approval. So right, there is the second half of that. So I'm glad that you brought that out. A person may not choose to be, you know, involved in it as far as he's not going to drink or he's not going to do the drug use, but they cheer people on and support them. So excellent thought. And it's sad, but you have more and more people in the church and in the denominational world saying, well, you know, let's love and let's tolerate him and all those kinds of things. And we live in a different time. Harvey?
I just heard on the radio this morning, this guy talking, he's gay, and he was displaying it to whoever wants to listen.
Yeah. Well, and that's another thought. Right. That's another thoughtful point. When we think about display, the display of sin, we often think about it in terms of actually seeing it. It's taking place in our presence. But there are other ways to display it. Radio, TV, internet. So it doesn't actually have to be an in-person situation that we're looking at to have it displayed before us. There are a lot of different mediums that are used to do that now. And that's sad. But that's one more way that the devil is able to go ahead and spread sin. And he's very, very good at what he does. Anybody else that I missed? Okay, Steve, I think we're over to you. 2 Kings is in chapter 5, 25 to 27.
Now it happened.
Let me ask, are we in 2 Kings 5?
Oh, I'm in 25.
Okay. All right, well, let's just back up a bit. 2 Kings 5, 25 to 27. Here we have some information about Elisha. Remember Naaman, the guy that had to go dip in the river 7 times and had the servant Gehazi. So let's see what we've got here. Thank you. Remember the story. Naaman has leprosy, goes over to see God's prophet. Is he willing to pay for the healing?
Yes.
Sure. You know, he brought a lot of money with him. How much money does Elisha want to take from him?
Nothing.
So he says, okay, you're healed, you can go back home. But Elisha's servant has witnessed what's taking place. And remember what happens with the servant. He decides, I'm going
to
go out there and talk to him for a little bit. And he has some things sent back. So, you know, he's in. He's not entitled to that. So he comes back. Gehazi comes back to the house. Elisha says, well, where'd you go? What's the answer?
No.
Oh, I didn't go anywhere. Well, he lied about his sin. He tried to cover it up. So the question is, are people sometimes public with their sin? Isaiah 3:9? Sure. Display it in various ways. But there are also cases, are there not, where people try to hide their sin? So when we find people in this life, it cuts both ways. All right, let's pick up our next references. Proverbs 28, if you turn there, just keep your hand held there because we're going to look at it twice. Proverbs 28, verse 13, and then we'll also look at Proverbs 28, 1. Steve will get those for us. And then 2 Samuel chapter 11, verses 14 through 15. 2 Samuel 11, okay. Harvey, was that you? Okay. Okay. Steve, would you mind then taking he... wanted to pick those up. 2 Samuel chapter 11, verses 14 and 15. 2 Samuel 11, 14 and 15. Okay, let's look first of all at Proverbs 28, verse 13.
When the righteous man do rejoice, there is great glory. But when the wicked rise, the man is guilty.
Is that?
I read 12.
Okay, I was thinking.
He that covereth his sins shall not prosper.
Okay, there we go. Thank you. Here's a fellow. He decides he's going to cover up his sin. We know some are public about it, but also from what we just learned, some are private about it. They want to cover it up. But God says what? You might be able to hide it from folks, at least for a while. But if you do that, you're not going to prosper. Remember the Old Testament verse, your sins shall find you out. Eventually, things are going to come to light. Then, if you'll stay there, Harvey, but we'll flip over to Steve now, 2 Samuel 11, verses 14 and 15.
Came to pass in the morning that David wrote a letter to Joab and sent it by hand of Uriah. He wrote in the letter saying, set ye Uriah in the forefront of the hottest battle and retire ye from him that he may be smitten and die.
Okay. David, pretty clever plan.
Send him off there where he's in danger.
In the heat of battle, and he's going to die. Well, if this husband dies, then what's going to happen with me as far as a guy's wife? We've just kind of cleaned up the mess, haven't we?
He thought, instead of making it obvious, I go out there and I kill him myself, I'll just send him out there where it's dangerous. But he had the authority to send
him out there. He did. Casualty of war. Well, too bad. Let's have a funeral service and everything will be okay. Well, it wasn't. It really was. But today, do we not find the same thing when it comes to sin? People still try to be clever about sin. We're going to do it when it's dark, or we're going to cover our tracks in this way or that way. But that Old Testament passage that we gave just a moment ago, your sins will find you out. Eventually, they're going to come to light. Sometimes people don't care about that, as we mentioned. Sometimes you're public. But if people try to cover things up, they're generally going to be caught, and God certainly sees all. Harvey, back to you. Proverbs 28, but now let's go back to verse 1. Ever followed a cop show where somebody did something, maybe escaped from jail? Or maybe they committed a great crime and now on the run? What are they doing? Always looking over the shoulder, aren't they? Because there's that guilt. There's that concern that they're going to be found. And that is one of the great things that wears on people. You talk to folks and sometimes people get medication for it. Sometimes they'll pursue some type of counseling or therapy for it. Sometimes it drives them insane. But guilt is a very, very powerful force. And it just kind of nags at the conscience. When I was in Bear Valley, when I was in Denver at Bear Valley, one of the students right now there at the school is a disabled detective. He can still do the basic things in life, but no longer able to serve in the police force. We talked for a while one night at supper, asked a lot of questions, and it was interesting to me to hear him say that there are people sometimes. They bring them down to the station, they put them in a little room, and they'll just confess. He said it's, and sometimes it's even there at the scene. They'll go out, a murder scene or something, and it's just, and people just, oftentimes, they get this great sense of relief because they're not hiding it anymore. But until they make that disclosure, there's great guilt. There's a terrible burden. And it's just like, somehow I've got to free myself from this. And the old statement, remember, confession is good for the soul? Well, that's kind of a time-tested added. So very, very interesting as far as sin and the ability that it has to cause guilt. Anything that you want to add or ask? All right, let's look at our next handful of passages. 2 Samuel 24, verse 10. And then we'll get somebody lined up for John 19, 11. And then Genesis 6, 5 and 6, plus Ephesians 4. 2 Samuel 24, 10. You have a minute to get there. Who wants to take it? All right, Maxine, Lois, let's head you over to John 19, verse 11. Then Genesis 6, 5 and 6. Genesis, all right, Josh. And Betty, if you'll take that last one, Ephesians. We'll read verse 30, pause for a minute, and then read verses 31 and 32, Ephesians 4. 2 Samuel 24, verse 10.
And David's heart condemned him after he had numbered the people. So David said to the Lord, I have sinned greatly in what I have done, but now I pray, O Lord, take away the iniquity of your servant.
Okay, what word stands out? David says, I've sinned. Could he have stopped there? Sure. But he didn't stop there. He said, I have sinned greatly. What's that tell you about the condition of his heart? He was stung. He was pricked. I mean, he really felt overwhelming sorrow. And today people feel that same kind of thing when it comes to sin. So this is a very, very powerful force. And it's not surprising then that God is the one that needs to handle it because he's the only one with that level of power. Question 10. And this is based on the passage it was just read. Do we often rate sin? Yeah. And yes, we do. We say, well, okay, you know, this is okay because it's not too bad. Everybody does this. But you know, over here, killing somebody, well, you know, that's a big sin, and we wouldn't want to be involved with that. Well, that brings to mind this question. We've heard over the years that all sin is sin. Would you say that statement is true or false? Is all sin sin? Yeah. Sin is, at its most basic definition, what's sin? All right. You have failed to follow some part of God's law. Would you say that there are maybe some passages that are bigger or greater that we can fail at? Well, let's put it in terms of government. Can you break the law?
Yes.
But can you just not break the law? I mean, you can really break the law? Yeah. What about the Bernie Madoffs of the world? It's one thing to cheat people out of a dollar, which I'm not saying that's right, but it's one thing to cheat a person out of a dollar. But what happens when you bilk a couple trillion out of folks? Would you say that those things are equal? Both are wrong, but there is a degree. If you go up and you beat up a guy and he ends up in the emergency room but there's no permanent damage, is there, in one sense, a difference between that and killing the guy? Yeah, both are wrong. You have mistreated a fellow human being, but there are some distinctions here, but a crime in both cases. Well, if that's how it works in the physical world, do you think that we can draw some parallels in the spiritual world? Sure. Yes, he did, and that's an observation that needs to be made. I didn't have that in the notes, but that's a brilliant point to make. Remember, you have there an eye for an eye, a life for a life. So God recognizes that punishment in those cases is warranted, but that punishment is not always going to be equal. I mean, it's one thing to take a guy's life. It's another thing to take the fellow's eye. And Jesus alludes to this as well in John 19, verse 11. And Lois, is that you?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Jesus answered, "No authority over me unless it had been given you from above. For this reason, he who delivered me up to you has the greater sin."
Okay. There could be several points that we could make about that passage, but Jesus does say that this fella has what kind of sin? Greater sin. So I think in conjunction with the Old Testament passages that Betty mentioned, this would also be a point that we could add. Anything that you want to discuss over that idea? Betty? Bonnie? Yes.
So what does it matter if it's a greater sin or a lesser sin?
Ultimately, it doesn't. Because a single lie would put somebody in hell if it's unforgiven. But in the same sense, I think we want to make the additional point that there is also an aspect to sin where sin is not sin. I mean, some sin can be greater, but still, you don't have to commit murder or you don't have to, you know, rob 100 banks to go to hell. So all sin is sin, but not all sin is equal. Maybe we could word it in that way. All sin is sin, but not all. Well, it would be like somebody saying breaking the law. Would we say that if you live long enough in this country, you're going to break the law at some point?
Sure, yeah.
Fail to wear a seatbelt? Well, okay, breaking the law. 55 miles an hour and you go 56? Well, okay, you've broken the law. But those infractions are not going to give us prison time because other infractions are going to be greater. Now, it's not a completely parallel point in the sense that the infractions in life, the small stuff that we do, we're probably not going to get punished for, but in the spiritual realm, even the smallest sin, if it's unforgiven.
Yeah, I guess I'm just not seeing it for
him. Okay.
I'll just make my point.
Well,
what if you say us where we're right before you get a car crash?
Who are you? Who are you? Are you a Christian or not?
You are a Christian.
Well, then doesn't 1 John 1 answer that question? If we're walking in the light? Remember, if we're walking in the light, and we've used this illustration in the past a couple of times. In fact, I talked to... I'll give you this illustration. I had hoped to maybe use it on another occasion. But I was put into a situation, the bus that I took up to the mountain, it brought me down. I was cold. By the time of day that we got headed back, I was kind of wiped out at that elevation and cold and whatnot, and I grabbed the first bus that was going back down the mountain. I didn't realize that those buses went to different places. So I ended up in a place which was pretty far away from the hotel, and I was stuck. It was late at night, and they were getting ready to shut down, and it was a little bit of a bind. So I went to a place, the closest one that I could find, went inside, and a lady showed up. She was going to go to the top of the mountain and gamble. So I guess they've got their regulars in the place where I was, and she said, "Who are you?" She didn't recognize me. I said, "Well, I'm a preacher. What are you doing here?" So we talked for a little while, and she said, "Well, I want you to know I'm a gambler." I said, "Well, okay." And she said, "I'm divorced. I'm a sinner. I'm a daughter of the devil." So it was kind of interesting to see her go through all of these various descriptions. And I said, well, you know, all people are sinners if they're old enough to know right from wrong. So we kind of talked for a little while. And in that, I gave her this illustration. I said, you know, you think about being on a road. You drive. And she said, sure. You think about being on that road. And are you always going to be perfectly centered between the center lines? She said, no. Well, as long as you're in between the lines, you're okay. And when you think about the Christian life, if you will take that same illustration, you've got the center line, you've got the outside line. And as we live the Christian life, it would be nice if we're perfectly centered in that lane. But we're not. Sometimes we're a little off to the left, sometimes we're a little off to the right, but we're still on the road. So when you think about the illustration that you brought up, since you said it's a Christian, here's the Christian. Have they veered a little bit? Sure. But are they off the road? They have no interest in rejecting Christ. They're not trying to, you know, get away from him. They simply sin. And that is my illustration for walking in the light. We're not walking a perfect life. But we're going to be, you know, a little over here sometimes and a little over here sometimes. But John's promise is that the blood of Christ continues to cleanse us from all sin. So if there is a swear word before, or, you know, some kind of bad thought before a person dies in a car wreck, as far as I can tell, it's covered.
A comment on that particular one. But she mentioned, and also you mentioned, if you're veering one way or another on the road, and are speeding 56 miles an hour and 55.
There's another.
That's man's law.
Yeah.
That's not breaking God's law, even though we're told that we have to obey the laws of the land.
Yeah.
That's God's law. Okay, we're told that. But when man sets up laws, sometimes them laws are very hard to keep.
Yeah. And that's true. But still, we have that attitude. We're trying to do what's right. We're walking in the light. Because if we're not careful, we really take God's grace and we toss it out the window. It almost becomes then a works-based salvation where we're saying we've got to be perfect. And that's just not the point. I mean, we're, from the standpoint of sin, dirty, you know, defiled, unclean. And as we go through the study, we'll see some of that. But good question. Anybody else? Okay, let's go back.
One more comment I'd like to make.
Okay.
We're commanded in the scriptures to read the Bible daily.
Sure.
So if we don't do that, we're sinning.
Well, now, wait a minute.
Right.
If we make that statement as a universal statement, you ever been sick? Ever been too sick to get out of bed? What if we didn't read the Bible on that day? You again want to, I think, qualify that just a bit, Bonnie, and say, what's part of walking in the light? Well, thinking about God, praying, studying his will, being involved with his people. There are going to be some exceptions in life. You know, there may be a person that's working 70, 80 hours a week, and some things that they want to do during that period of time, they're not able to do. But it goes back to, you know, we want to live the best life that we can. And I know what you're saying, but we don't want to be overly literal on that point, because there are going to be some exceptions where we're sick or, you know, because of some work obligations, those kinds of things. But we do want to live the kind of life that God describes, and that is being as involved in a service that we possibly can, regular study of his word. Would we agree on that?
Probably.
Okay.
Unless it's willful.
Yes, and there again, that's a key word. You know, are you willfully? Sure. All this, and that's why I gave the illustration of the road. We're not always going to be dead center, but when you have somebody willfully crossing the center line or the crossing of the outside line willfully, then you get into some problem areas, and then you've got some grave concerns for a person's spiritual life. But if we're trying to, you know, make that effort to live according to God's will. We, you know, Romans 5:2 says we stand in the grace of God. But that's contingent on trying to walk in the light. And we want to avoid the view where somebody says, well, I've sinned. I'm out of God's grace. I repented. I'm back in God's grace. Kind of like the hokey pokey. That's not how it works. But if we're trying to do what's right, we stand in that grace. Don, did you have a thought? Okay. Betty?
From that hurt that was given to you, say it happened that day, and that day you Are you saying that because of those hard feelings for that person that hurt you, if you're saying, okay, I've sinned, I'm going to hell? See, I don't. That's what I say, that if you're trying to walk God's way, it's not to say, you're not living perfect. Jesus is the only perfect. Mm-hmm. So you're going to have times like that in your life.
Sure.
I mean, you may have a chance to repent of it and work through it and repent of it. And you may not have. But if you've been living God's way as much as you're physically and mentally capable of doing each day, the little sins that God says you're not perfect, that we're going to have, that's where he says his blood and his mercy and his grace covers it.
Yeah, get back there to trying to walk in the light. And for the person, if you think about the scenario that you described, and if you have someone who's really trying to live the Christian life, what do you think their attitude's going to be? You think their attitude's going to be, I'm never going to forgive you. That's just off my radar screen. Or do you think it's going to be something like this? I've been hurt. And I've been deeply hurt. Today I can't forgive the person, but I hope that the day is going to come where I can work through this. Which attitude's right? Well, obviously the second one. And I would think for anybody that's trying to walk in the light, that's going to be, at least on some level, what they're trying to do. And God knows the heart. But if you have a person that has that kind of attitude, as far as the first one that we talked about, there are probably some other things in the life that are not quite right. And how God is going to sort that out, I don't know. I mean, there is grace there. There is a lot of grace there. But our attitude should be that we want to live the best life that we can. And as you said, when those times come up, you know, our intent is to try to deal with them, you know, as quickly as possible, but to recognize that there can be some times where there needs to be a period that passes, whether that's days, months, or sometimes years, but we chip away at that. And, you know, that's part of the Christian life. You know, you try to increase the good and you try to, you know, decrease the bad, and that's a proper way to live. And well, you've got a couple things going on there. In that situation, you know, if you're honest with yourself and with the other person, for example, let's say that somebody hits you in the church parking lot and you lose both legs. Well, for most people, it's probably going to be a little difficult when they wake up from the surgery and the doctor says, look, your legs are gone, just to say, well, okay, I forgive you. I mean, they've affected you for life. But the attitude is, this is a traumatic event for me, and I know what's right, but it's going to take me a little while, I think, for a lot of people to work through this, and to say to the person, you know, right now, I'm not feeling very charitable towards you. I mean, if that's honestly how we feel. Now, you may have some people that say, you know, it was an accident or whatever, but what if the person intended to do it? They just got mad at you and decided, I'm just going to hit him today. But to say, I'm going to try to work, I'm working on this. And it might take a while. But I do love you, and I do want to work through this. Parents do that with their kids. There's some issues sometimes with children where parents say, you know, we love you, but what you've done? I mean, this is going to take some time for me to process and work through. But there again, you know, you think about the spirit that's being engaged there. Honesty. Kindness. To the greatest degree. So you're still trying to walk in the light as you work through things. But sometimes I think people get the impression that we've just got to fix everything up in a day. Well, it doesn't always work that quickly. But are we trying to walk in the right way rather than be like the world and have that hard heart and say, I'm never going to forgive you? So, you know, we work on this stuff little by little. Betty,
when
come
I
in.
I come to a point like that, I love you. I don't feel so friendly toward you right now.
Yeah. Well, I think when you look at the book of Acts, you find some situations. You know, you think you see family members, for example, being drug off to prison. How do they feel at the evening meal? Now, there are probably some people that prayed for the persecutors, but still, I would imagine as they're going through the turmoil involved in having that family separated, it's going to take a little while to work through things. And Jesus was the perfect man. I mean, he was able to say from the cross, Father, forgive them. But for a lot of people, we're human beings, and for us, it's not quite as quick and easy as the process was maybe for him. Betty?
I was told by someone not long after I became a Christian. I was struggling with some issues against a person, and they said, pray for him. Pray for yourself. Pray for help. And you're amazed. What difference that makes.
Yeah, but like I say, that's part of that healing process, is part of the maturity process. A mature Christian is going to be able to forgive likely faster than someone else. I'll tell you, when I was a new Christian, the guy that taught me to type, I hated him. He hadn't been an officer, I probably would have choked him to death. Because this fellow, I typed about 30 words a minute when we met, and that wasn't good typing. And by the time I left, I was over 100. Now, this fellow, this was pre-computer days. You were typing everything out in a typewriter by hand. And I would, you know, finally get a letter done or something else and send it to him, typed it as it was requested, and every letter was redone at least 50 times. Now, you imagine working for a boss. Every single project that you do, it's at least 50 times revised. He'd just get out his red pen and make some marks and say, Brad, we can do better. Well, it wasn't we, it's you. And I worked for that man for 2.5 years, and I'll tell you what, that was the hardest boss I have ever had. And like I said, I had hard feelings against him, nightmares, and if there's anybody I've ever wanted to kill, it was him. And it took me a while. You know, I wanted to live in the right way, but when you're put in that kind of situation, and you know, you may be knocking out 10, 12 letters a day, times 50, and it's, you know, you can pretty much just recite the letter from memory after about time 47. And but you know, again, that's part of the maturing process. It helps build patience and some other qualities that you might not otherwise build. And then you have to toss in here the mix as well. Here's a person who's trying to do what's right. Remember 1 Corinthians 10:13, there's no temptation taking you, but man can bear it. God is able to help you during those times. So if we consider that passage as far as a promise, God knows about those circumstances. And in his providence to still let you have the time to work through that or you know, work in the life in another way where that can be handled. But you know, with sin, we can't always resolve it overnight. But a lot of times I think people think, well, you know, got involved with drugs. What about the fellow who was an addict? You think he can just turn the switch off and, you know, he no longer desires drugs? The guy who's involved with pornography? The person who was involved with, you know, a marital situation that ended up contrary to the scriptures? You know, some things take a while to fix. And when you look at the Bible, you know, you find that kind of thing. So that's something important for us. All right, did we go through that enough? Okay. We're not going to get through a sheet, but we'll just pick it up next week. Genesis 6, 5, and 6, who's got that? Josh.
The Lord saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every intention of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. And the Lord was sorry that he had made man on the earth, and it grieved him to his heart.
Okay, towards the end of that verse, what's the Bible say? God was grieved. Sin grieves God. Sin's distressing to God. And as you tie this into some of the other things that were just said, what's God doing? People, their hearts are getting harder and harder. You remember Genesis 6, 5, their hearts, their minds were evil how often? Continually. People were not interested in trying to do what was right. And finally God said, enough. But as long as there is that interest in trying to head in the right way, God's patient with people. Several times we read about the long-suffering of God. Then Betty, are we over to you? Ephesians 4, verse 30. Okay, we don't often think about, I guess, grieving anyone besides God the Father, but every member of the Godhead can apparently be grieved by sin. Here Paul specifically mentions the Holy Spirit. And then if we look at the next two verses, we see how this grief is caused. Verses 31 and 32. Okay, two interesting points here. Number one, don't grieve the Holy Spirit. Well, how are you going to grieve him? What do we find in verse 31 plus verse 32? You can be involved with bitterness, anger, wrath, malice, sin. God's going to be grieved by sin, Genesis 6, Ephesians 4. And then, why do you think Paul had to write these words? What did we just say within the last 5 minutes? Sometimes people have what kind of attitude? If you're a Christian, what? never get angry, you just, it just magically goes, you never get bitter, you just slash that away. Why do you think Paul had to write these words?
To remind us we're human.
All right, that's right. Because here are people, they were involved with these kinds of things. They were struggling with these kinds of things. And Paul, did he treat them as Christians or non-Christians?
Christians.
They're Christians. But they were Christians who were struggling with the very issues that we talked about. Now that tells me something. Paul doesn't come out and say you're not in Christ. But he does say, here's a reminder, what do you need to do? You need to work on these things. You need to be kind. You know, if you're headed over here as far as the wrong qualities, you know, you're headed towards that center line and you kind of need to, you know, start correcting course a little bit. And that's encouraging to me. It should be encouraging to us that God says, you know, I am a God that's long-suffering, but you do need to be called back to my will, to be reminded of what's right. And sometimes people are disciplined, as we see in the book of Hebrews, for that, to remind them, hey, you're just kind of getting too far afield here, and you need to come back and so forth. All right, let's pick up two more passages, Romans 7:14, and then if you're the reader, we'll also ask you to read Romans 7:18 to 24. Who wants to take care of our Romans 7 text? All right, Lois. Let's start with Romans 7, verse 14.
For we know that the law is spiritual, but I am of flesh, sold into bondage of sin.
Okay, this is another passage that ties into the discussion that we just had. Paul, as he looks at sin, what does he say about it? What can it do to you? Bondage. What's that? Slavery. Full control. Remember the Hebrew writer once talked about the root of bitterness? If you let, it's kind of like some of the things that start to grow in the yard. It starts out small and you don't pay much attention to it. After a while, what do you have? You got a tree. Maybe it's some kind of ground cover, which is a weed, and it spreads. Or maybe it's something in the tree category, and you look out one day and you think, wow, that's big. Well, same thing can happen in the heart, and that's why God goes back and deals with these things. We need to be able to get to the point where we forgive people. We need to watch the anger and the other things, because if those items are not dealt with, it's almost like maintenance on a house or car. You know, you can let some things slide for a while, but you let things go too far, and what happens? Your house collapses. Your car has some major issues, and it's very, very expensive. All right, Lois, verses 18 to 24, if you would as well.
For I know that nothing good dwells in me, that is, in my flesh. For the wishing is present in me, but the doing of the good is not. For the good that I wish I do not do, but I practice the very evil that I do not wish. But if I am doing the very thing I do not wish, I am no longer the one doing it, but sin which dwells in me. I find then the principle that evil is present in me, the one who wishes to do good. For I joyfully concur with the law of God in the inner man, but I see a different law in the members of my body, waging war against the law of my mind and making me a prisoner of the law of sin, which is in my members. Wretched man that I am, who will set me free from the body of this death?
Thank you. This is a great summary passage, because Paul, as he looks at his life, he says, do I want to do good or do I want to do evil? I want to do good. But with that desire to do good, what's also rolling around in my mind?
Sin.
Sin. Isn't that just what we've talked about? I want to go to heaven. I want to be with God. But what am I struggling with? There's anger. There's bitterness. There's wrath. The Apostle Paul said that there was this great conflict in his life. Now, if an apostle had that conflict, what do you think is going to be true of us? It's going to be there as well. But God says, I keep calling you back. And Bonnie, I think that's one of the reasons why there needs to be that daily study of the Word. You know, even if it's a small amount of study. Because that's going to help us go back and try to refocus on that right way. The assemblies, everything about the Christian life, is designed to remind us to keep coming back to God, to doing what's right. Because there is this big problem of sin. People sometimes try to hide it, as we talked about it. And sometimes they're very clever about it. So it is a huge, huge issue. And it's one of the things that is... talked about specifically in the book of Revelation, specifically where we are.